Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Good day to you all. It's Oliver on the air till 10, and it is Thursday now, the 4th of September. We have a lovely show for you today. We're at your service on a very agreeable morning in Dublin, I can tell you, at least in Dublin. Your thoughts can be tapped out in the usual way on the WhatsApp North and South 087 032 32 32, and let your fingers do the talking on the email Oliver at RTE.ie. Well, this morning, I can tell you, our third Derry Girl of the Week is with us. It was accidental, I swear. We had Siobhan McSweeney, we had Art Campion, the hot priest. But now we have the OG Derry Girl. Saoirse Monica Jackson not only played the lead Erin in the comedy series on Channel 4, she is also an actual Derry Girl. Well, she's a Derry woman now. She is also married, and she grew up cross-border, hopping between Donegal and Derry. So she's pure Derry. She's yandere. What a turn she had in the truly great Irish comedy by Lisa McGee. Liam Neeson starred alongside her in the final series, a memorable opener.
What were you doing on the grounds, girls?
We went there too. We thought that we could. We were just trying to.
Welcome.
We would like to speak to a solicitor, please.
All in good time.
For the tape, the inspector is refusing us the right of legal representation.
There is no tape.
Well, why can't we speak to a solicitor?
I didn't say you couldn't.
Oh. You're trying to stitch us up, Archie.
Why would I do that?
Because we're Fenians.
That is a very serious allegation, girls.
Are you denying that your organization is prejudiced, Inspector? For the tape, the inspector is refusing to answer.
There is no tape.
I love the range of the vocals from Saoirse Monica Jackson in that. Looking forward to chatting to her later on this morning. And our conversation with The Quiet Man will continue as well, because there is a festival celebrating John Ford in Connemara, which we'll also come to later on this morning. Now, I'm afraid to tell you, the presidential election, the stumble for the Oras, continues everywhere. And even just in the last hour, we've had quite a spicy encounter, because the independent senator, a member of the Joint Oireachtas Committee on Disability Matters, Tom Clonan, he was in Morning Ireland. I don't know if you heard it, but he basically said that being a disabled citizen in Ireland is an abject experience these days. And he says, I believe this presidential election will be a referendum on this government's performance on disability rights. It was very strong, very emotive performance. And he's also speaking in the context, I think, of an election that's smothering very important stories, such as the appeals of parents of children with various disabilities, parents looking for action on autism appointments, on early intervention, which is a legal right, and it's against the law for the delays that the government are overseeing at the moment. And we've discussed this on this matter on this programme a few times as well, but nothing has improved. On delays for scoliosis patients, children, on special needs spaces in schools, as reading during the week there, this week, that there are places, but they're unoccupied because they don't have the staff for them and so on. And I think Tom Clonan was giving oxygen to the conversation, but it would have been uncomfortable listening for the Fine Gael team, campaign team, who's behind Heather Humphreys at the moment. Not the only uncomfortable position for a candidate, because Jim Gavin is the focus of the Irish Independent story this morning by Mary Regan and Tabitha Monaghan on his current job with the aviation regulator, the Irish Aviation Authority. The aviation regulator says it will keep Jim Gavin's high-ranking job open for 7 years if he's successful in his bid for the Oras, or until after his campaign if he is not elected. And the IAA has refused to say whether Jim Gavin has taken leave or when he intends to do so, but the organisation says there is a secondment arrangement in place for anyone elected to office from the period of their nomination or election until their elected term ends. He's the Chief Operations Officer at the Irish Aviation Authority, which regulates the aviation sector, and it's under the remit of the Department of Transport, currently being run by Fianna Fáil Minister, Dara O'Brien. And the IAA said it couldn't comment on an individual's employment status, and the question would best be directed to the individual themselves. Now, the problem here is that Jim Gavin is not doing interviews. He's not responded to questions from the Independent, whether he's still working for the IAA or whether he's on paid or unpaid leave. And Fianna Fáil is not answering those questions either. So discomfort in those two quarters, and a bit of discomfort coming from Ivana Bacik's direction on Morning Isle towards Sinn Féin, saying it's ridiculous that they haven't said which way they're going in terms of a nomination, a party of the left, and that she has staked her views of the Labour Party, even though there's discord there as well. So stumbling away, but moments of discomfort this far out, it kind of is a sign maybe of what things are to come. Now, there are interesting articles on the numbers for the presidential election. Harry McGee in the Irish Times says, is there still a path open for independents to get through? And he's pointing out that the parliamentary party need 20 nominees to get through. There are 234 TDs and senators, but if you subtract the big party blocks from the equation, the horizons become very limited for a presidential hopeful from the independent side. It just leaves basically 30 Oireachtas members who are independent or belong to micro-parties. And there's a significant body of politicians who would be conservative, centre or centre-right. So they can, but they can only nominate one candidate. You can only have use your vote once in terms of nominating someone for the presidency. The council route as well provides the easier path, perhaps. You need four nominations from county councils, a majority vote. There's a lot of talk about the council rules, but helpfully, Ciara O'Loughlin in the Mirror this morning is outlining the special meetings that the councils will have. And I think it's very helpful because she's writing that councils already have confirmed dates for the special meetings. Most of them are planning to happen around mid-September. And at the meetings, and by the way, independents Gareth Sheridan, Nick Delahanty, Joanna Donnelly are each trying to secure four councils and get onto the ballot on the 24th of October. And Maria Steen likely to follow their lead. So they're the independent names being seriously mentioned at this stage. And the meetings will allow those candidates to present their manifesto to the council, and then it'll be followed by a short Q&A with the councillors. And then they consider the nomination of the council. The candidate will also need a councillor who will propose them and someone to second them. And then it goes to a roll call vote, and the candidate with the majority of votes will be nominated as the candidate for the council. You have to win a majority, and then there are all sorts of machinations because then big parties have to decide whether they allow their councillors to have a free vote or whether they might abstain, which reduces the number you need to get to a majority. So a lot to happen in the stumble for the Oireachts this morning. Now, the US Open in tennis, the main story from that so far to date was the hat snatcher. You might have seen that story about the wealthy Polish CEO who snatched a cap from the hands of a child as the Polish tennis star Majszak was handing him kind of a signed cap. And the rich Polish guy, in a moment of madness, he's apologised since, and that has been accepted by the Polish tennis star, who subsequently met the child from whom the cap was stolen. Well, there are nicer stories this morning, because if you remember, the Wimbledon women's final involved the young 24-year-old American who was absolutely humiliated in the final. 6-love, 6-love. The final lasted less than an hour, and she cried the whole way through the speech afterwards. How do you pick yourself up from utter dismay in front of the world's media and the watching media and so on? Well, she faced the same woman, the Polish rival, in the quarterfinals of the US Open yesterday. And she did something extraordinary. She was against Iga Świątek, and she rewatched the 6-love, 6-love humiliating defeat in full the night before the quarterfinal. And she said it was the worst experience of her professional career, and she rewatched the whole thing. I watched it back, painful as it was. It worked. She beat the Polish rival. This is only 8 weeks after that humiliation at the hands of the same woman, and she is into the semi-finals of the US Open. I think it's just a really amazing story for anyone who's hit back and get setbacks and you think you're over and done with. And she's back, and she will face Naomi Osaka in the US Open tennis final. Another amazing story. Two-time US Open champion Naomi Osaka says her dream is coming true as she made her return to the semi-finals in New York with victory over Carolina Muchova. And the reason this is amazing, if you haven't been following it, is that she did not play for the last 14 months, or she did not play for 14 months, since the birth of her daughter in July 2023. So she says, it's my first time in a semi-final since becoming a mother. I was sitting up there watching and hoping I'd have the opportunity to play in this court again. This is a dream come true. She is 27. She'll play Amanda Anisimova in the semi-final. And that's just, it's another amazing story. By the way, if she goes all the way, she would be the first, I think, since Kim Clijsters to win a US Open after coming back as a new mammy. So it's amazing. Incredible stuff. This is the stuff you miss if you're not following sport at all properly. If you're following what's going on in the Middle East and Saudi Arabia in particular, seems to be an unpleasant place due to the dictatorship oil regime and so on. You know that. They've had the LIV Golf. They had to kind of capitulate. All the Saudi money went in behind it and the PGA couldn't really compete. So they've basically merged. There was a snooker tournament there last year. They're obviously spending a fortune on football tournaments and players. Ronaldo's playing in Saudi Arabia. Now they've turned their eyes from sports washing to comedy washing, it would appear. Because at the end of this month, the Saudi capital will witness the gathering of the most elite group of international comedy stars you've probably ever seen. It's taking place at something called Boulevard City, which is just built from the ground in the desert. The head of the Saudi Entertainment Authority, His Excellency Turki Al-Sheikh, has announced preparations for the festival with the 50 biggest comedians from around the world. So among the top names are the Riyadh Comedy Festival. This is a real thing. Dave Chappelle, massive American star, joining an illustrious list of comedians. Bill Burr, Jim Jeffries, Jimmy Carr from across the water from here. Kevin Hart is going to be there. Russell Peters, who's enormous worldwide. There are some women as well. Whitney Cummins and Jessica Kirsten. In Saudi Arabia, this is. It's the first of its kind ever we've heard of. And they're saying the primary goal is to enhance Riyadh's position as a destination for cultural and artistic events, and they're going with comedy. Pete Davidson from Made Famous in SNL. Chris Tucker is going to be there. Louis C.K. Jim Owen is on the list as well. And it's not really, the Riyadh Comedy Festival is not really making much waves in the mainstream media. In fact, the first I heard of it was in Richard Osman's podcast, where he's discussing the fact that it hasn't made it in the mainstream media. It's like they're trying to keep it quiet, he says. He criticises at length as well the fact that they're just really doing it for the money. Some of them are openly saying they're doing it for the money, but a lot of them are saying we are free speech machines, the American ones in particular. Which is amazing. Now, it's very, the Irish comedians go across the Middle East quite a lot, but they generally go to places like Dubai and so on, and they're performing for Irish workers out there who are buying tickets. The event is hosted by promoters, not the regime, the Emiratis or anything like that. This festival in Riyadh is run and fully funded and fully run by the Saudi regime, and the comedians are in no doubt who's paying their incredibly substantial fees and expenses to go there. They're defending the decision to go. They're free speech machines. So it'll be very interesting to hear their jokes about the regime's beheadings and treatment of women and their bombing of Yemen and involvement of Saudi citizens in 9/11 or the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. And in fact, in June only, 2 months ago in Saudi Arabia, a journalist was executed for a tweet he made some years ago. He spent 7 years in prison after being charged and convicted of high treason. Saudi Arabia is a big trading partner of Ireland's, incidentally. They love the beef. Saudi with a chance of meatballs. So that's what's going on over there beyond. By the way, in England, there's trouble in British politics. If you've been following the Deputy Prime Minister, Angela Rayner, the Conservative press are obsessed with her. They had a picture of her vaping in a kayak 2 weeks, and they keep running the same picture. She kind of looked a bit sort of badass around that time, but now she's under pressure over a property scandal. Other stuff going on in the background of Britain, by the way, just Nigel Farage faraging all over the place. He skipped his duties in the British House of Commons and was off in America, where the Democrats absolutely lambasted him for talking about free speech when he continually attacks anyone who says things he doesn't like. What else is going wrong in Britain? The economy's in the loo. The Beckham family are split asunder. The royal family are feuding still. The king, unfortunately, is unwell. He's rarely seen these days. They're battling each other over English flags everywhere. That's been copied by some people over here using the tricolour in a fit of irony. People are being arrested over tweets. And the criticism of that is coming even from the London Metropolitan Police Commissioner yesterday. Just extraordinary. But it's the Deputy Prime Minister of Britain is on the verge of big trouble and getting all the headlines. She admitted she underpaid up to £40,000 in stamp duty on a newly purchased seaside flat in somewhere called Hove. It cost £800,000. She said it was a mistake she made because of incorrect legal advice, and she's basically referred herself to the ethics people and reported the matter to the tax man to correct the discrepancy. But of course, the Conservatives and the rivals say this is hypocrisy because she was very vocally in support of tougher property taxes like the ones that she kind of accidentally and purposely didn't pay. Keir Starmer, the PM, he's backing her at the moment, praising her proactive transparency. It's quite funny. He should go to the Riyadh Comedy Festival. But the education this morning, Education Minister, they call them secretaries over there, said she couldn't back Angela Rayner just now. So there's a bit of trouble over there beyond. Everything has gone to bits, hasn't it? It makes our lot look kind of semi-competent at times, opposition and government. And remember the painting I was talking about last week, the looted, long-lost painting, looted in Nazi-occupied Europe from a Jewish collector, portrait by an Italian master, and it was spotted on an estate agent's website in a house on sale in Argentina, hanging in the house that belonged to the daughter of a Nazi fugitive. And then the police raided it and the painting was gone. And but they did arrest, and under suspicion of illegal smuggling of artwork and so on, and they have now found the artwork. She surrendered it, Patricia Cajun. She's in her 70s. She's the daughter of Friedrich, a former Nazi guy, senior Nazi who escaped to Argentina like so many did. It's kind of much under interrogated why Argentina decided to house so many of them. But anyway, the artwork has now been returned by the lawyer of the woman who is under house arrest after search of her property initially failed to find the painting. They've also found other artworks as well, which they are now testing to see if it was also looted. Fascinating story. Back to China's massive rally to mark 80 years since the end of World War II, where you had the dictators of the New World Axis smiling and having the crack side by side with President Xi of China in the middle, flanked by Kim Jong-un of North Korea, who came along in his armoured train, and a very merry-looking Vladimir Putin as well. They were caught on a hot mic because they live-streamed it accidentally in China, and international reporters were able to pick up the audio feed about what they're saying to each other. What would these massive dictators be chatting about? I suppose they're like laughing about America, talking about very serious plans. No, they were talking about how they could live to 150 years of age. So you've got President Xi, he's 72 years of age, by the way, saying to Putin through a translator, you know, people rarely live to 70 once upon a time, but these days, at 70, you're still only a child. And the Russian president, here's the translation. He now is very clever. He talks in a way to the president that nobody could hear what Putin is saying. But because his words had to be translated into Mandarin, the BBC microphones picked it up and they translated it. And so Vladimir Putin is saying back to President Xi, oh, yeah, sure, you know, with the development of biotechnology, human organs can be continuously transplanted. You can live younger and younger and even achieve immortality. And poor old Kim Jong-un, he doesn't speak Russian or Mandarin. Just nodding on. He's only 41 years of age. He's not thinking about that at all, as the other old fellas are talking about living forever, smiling along. And this has kind of brought a highlight to China's extensive organ transplant program that has long been controversial, not least because it uses executed prisoners' organs to supply the hospitals. These are the new masters of the universe, everybody, talking about endless human organ transplants to keep them alive, keep them running their regimes so efficiently. Basically, we've got a text from Mary saying, I'm appalled at your presenter. This is me they're talking about. Calling the presidential election a stumble for the Oris. This is an important democratic process for this country, and this cheap, petty sniping is neither respectful or helpful, says Mary. There's your view. De Laurentiis. Irish music. De Laurentiis there. John says, on the tennis reversal, this is coming back, I always think to bagel an opponent, six love, is rather callous. Humiliating your opponent to all intents and purposes, a ruthless champion should have been magnanimous, gifted her the game or two. Then again, it might just have been the Americans, some impetus on the way back into the game. It is a tough one sometimes, isn't it? But like, I think in sport, you just have to do what you do.